We are a weekly podcast, Soul of a Gamer.
Hey, I'm smart this time. Well, I did not, this
let's
time.
Let's not go that far, okay?
I will fuck it up again.
I love pressing that button. That was my favorite button.
That's definitely.
This game gets really fucking weird.
So you do acid and then you go into the hamster shit.
And this week is
Night Trap.
Night Trap.
They're right behind you, Night Trap. 10-year-old birthday party. Next scene, kill the kid.
You got to kill the kid. Sha la 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 la, car is coming. Throw your body into the car and die. All I could do every time I was playing Ethan was just would start walking around and go, Jason!
Oh, God.
It's just...
8.
22 and a half.
What? This is the worst countdown of all time.
Yeah, 22 and a half.
30.
What are you doing? 22 and a half is the end.
Oh, shit, my bad. Hey, guys.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back, or welcome for the first time. We are Soul of a Gamer podcast. I am Scott.
And I am Steven.
And every week we play a game. We give you the background of the making of the game, and we tell you how we felt the game did.
Yes.
We do hope you enjoyed our last week's episode, which was...
Why am I drawing a blank? God damn it.
I don't remember either, I'm going to be honest.
Miles Morales. Jesus.
I look forward to you. You know what's funny is I even opened up this computer, and it had the script for Miles Morales open. And I still forgot because as soon as it leaves my brain, I just don't care anymore.
Maybe I should put at the top of my notes, like, this was the last week's game, dumbass.
Yeah, right. But yeah, we hope you enjoyed that one. That was a lot of fun for us. You know, middle of the road game, not the best Spider-Man game out of the three newest ones that came out, but definitely better than a lot of them, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's still a lot better than a lot of the really trash Spider-Man games that came
out. Yeah, remember Spider-Man 3?
Oh, God. Spider-Man 2 is like the only good one from the original three.
Yes, and Spider-Man 3 was just so horrifically bad, it wasn't even funny. And then also, what was that one? God damn, the one where it was a sequel, and they named it like Interdimensional something or
Scattered
Dimensions, and then the entire game took place inside of an office building. You're like, you're Spider-Man. Why are we in here?
You switch back and forth between Spider-Man 2099, O'Hara, and the regular Spider-Man.
Yeah, it was just so stupid. And like that, it could have been that bad, guys. Like, honestly, it could have been that bad, and it wasn't. So
I do remember that was like my first introduction to Spider-Man 2099. So I thought that was at least like the cool part of that game. But
And then you're like, why can't I web swing? Oh, because I'm inside a fucking building.
You could web swing, just barely.
Kind of.
You could slide your butt across the ground, right?
God, that was just so... That's what a dumb thing to think about with Spider-Man,
right? I haven't
played
that in so long, I don't remember much about it,
honestly. Dude, it's like throwing Superman in a one-by-one cube.
That sounds like the best Superman.
But how boring... It's like the N64 Superman, right? It's like...
Yeah.
You're Superman, and all you're doing in this game is flying through rings.
Oh, speaking of Superman, though, there's this new tech that I heard about for a game. There's this game coming out where the boss fights in it are AI-driven, where the AI actually learns based off of your playing.
Yeah.
And so it adapts to you fully. And Jen's like, that's kind of a stupid thing. And a lot of people were like, who love like From Software games are like, that's really dumb because like the whole point of it is like you learn how to battle these and you persevere through just trial and error.
Yeah.
And if it's adapting you all the time, it gets to a point where it's going to be unstoppable.
Yeah.
And I was like, that would be the perfect thing for a Superman against Doomsday game. Why are we not doing it? And I was like, if you put it in the right context, that could be really fucking cool. But a From Software game, it would be awful, it'd be shit. But if you do like Superman versus Doomsday, and Doomsday has got an adaptive AI technology that adapts to everything you do, that's perfect for his lore.
Yeah, I mean, they did a great job with Suicide Squad, so they should make a Superman game.
Yeah. Give him a gun. Give Superman a gun.
All right, well, let's just start this right out with Steven. What have you been playing?
I finally got Jin, my wife, if you guys don't know, to play Baldur's Gate 3. So when we're playing co-op Baldur's Gate 3, I hadn't actually played a co-op before, so it's kind of interesting. I kind of like the dynamics of co-op a little bit. I like that you have full range to do whatever you want. You can totally split off, and you can actually, like, the party leader can actually pick which other characters you're controlling. So, like, she could control all of them if she wants, or she could give me half of the players or whatever. Yeah. So it's really cool. There's, like, a lot of really adaptive things with it.
Nice. Yeah, I would probably do half and half, right?
Yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah.
And that so way she's keeps got it easy. On her side, and I've got Shadowheart on my side.
Okay.
But the thing that and sucks then, with that is,
so
like,
do you each get to make your own character?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't think we each get
our own dream visitor character, like our own emperor character.
Oh,
and
nice.
Everything else, and like some of the dialogue, if she talks to someone, I would, if I want to also have those same dialogue things, I would also have to talk to them. It doesn't count for a union thing unless it's like a story based thing.
Interesting.
But we can also romance different characters at the same times and stuff too.
Interesting.
So she's all romancing right. Lizelle, and I'm obviously romancing my bae, Shadowheart.
Yeah, you're bae. He said bae, not bitch, guys. Bae. I think he said bae. I hope he said
bae. Yeah, bae.
I think bae. He said bitch.
My bitch. Whatever. A lot of people think she's a bitch. Jin the entire time is like, I don't like Shadowheart. I was like, Shadowheart is my love. You leave her alone.
Get away from her, you whore.
But I've actually never really played with Lizelle, so watching her play with Lizelle is kind of hilarious because, like, the romance between Lizelle is so, like, brutal and weird and, like, dominatrix.
It's actually, I think it's the best one out of all of them.
It's the quickest. You can get her, like, I think the record for getting her to sleep with you is like 4.5 minutes.
Oh, well, yeah, because she comes to you.
Yeah.
But no, she has the best ending because you find that egg, Githyanki, right? Githyanki egg. And she, at the end of the game, it's the only option you have to have, like, a child with the person that you're romancing with.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you both swear to take care of the egg together.
Yeah, I know, like, in my playthrough with Shadowheart, we just were a lesbian romance and we ran off together. I'm actually playing a dude for the first time, so this is interesting.
Nice. Yeah. All right, I'm not really playing anything right now. I've just been kind of dabbling with Dragon Age and then switching back and forth between, like, 17 games, so.
Sounds about right.
I'm not, like, in tune to anything at this moment in time, but I probably will jump back into Dragon Age and get a lot of it done.
That's fair. I did go back after we played Miles Morales and finished Miles Morales as well.
Nice. Yeah,
I was like 2 missions away, so I was like, I gotta go just finish it.
You mean like you finished the entire 100%ing the...
Oh, no, not yet. I am gonna do that, though, because I haven't actually done that on PS4 or PS5 with that one. I've done it with Spider-Man 2, and I've gotten like 90% on Spider-Man 1, but...
It's just rough because it's not... You don't get... Those trophies just aren't as appealing to me as achievements are.
Well, and, like, the weirdest thing I was noticing with the trophies is, like, so it keeps track of, like, your individual trophies, and, like, there's different levels of trophies, which is also a weird thing, like bronze, silver, gold, and platinum trophies. But then there's also, like, you have an experience point gauge.
Interesting.
And, like, so, like, your trophy system, like, I'm a level 61 trophy or something like that, and I'm like, what the fuck? And I was like reading it, and like each different trophy and each different level of trophy gives you a different amount of points. So like a bronze trophy gives you 1 point, a platinum trophy gives you like 5 points, and like playing a certain game gives you this many points, or doing this gives you a certain points. I was like, what the fuck is this like leveling system for trophies? Like, what?
Yeah, I mean, it's just that everyone tries to copy the Xbox way. I think Xbox, you know, and the 360 sucks so much. Like, that was, like, the worst system that ever came out.
Oh,
but they
bad,
they did so much right, you know? They just did
achievements
and the community and Xbox Live and, like, not overcharging for shit and then Gamepad. Like, they've just done so much right that it overshadows the amount that they've done wrong. And PlayStation, Sony has done so much console stuff right, and then everything else has been just nonstop wrong until recently.
There's so many things that I still wish, like, with Sony, like, so with Xbox, like, if I wanted to buy a game for both me and for you for the channel, I can buy the game for myself, and then I can buy it again as a gift and just send it directly to your account.
Yeah.
With PlayStation, there's no way to buy a game as a gift.
Interesting. Why?
I don't know, but there's no way to do it, because I was going to do that because I wanted to play Remnant with my brother-in-laws, Michael and David, because they're both big Souls-like games, and I was like, oh, you guys need to play Remnant, so I was going to buy it for both of them when it was on sale for like $5, but I couldn't. I was like, and they're like, oh, just Venmo me the $5 and I'll buy it, and I was like, I guess that's the way PlayStation users do it. I wish I could just send it to you. Like, why wouldn't you have that?
To me, it's funnier that they're like, wait, you're going to buy us a game? Well, give us the money and we'll buy it. Instead of just saying, no, don't worry about it, dude. We'll fucking buy it. We'll spend the $5.
I mean, I offered I wasn't going to ever be mad about it. But
I know. I'm outing them right now. They're probably not going to be happy if they listen to this, but they have been outed.
Well, I think they actually did both buy it themselves. So
yeah, after you sent them $5, you're right.
Well, no, actually, I think they actually just did buy it themselves. I was mad about not buying it, and then he said that, but then he's like, "I'll just buy it myself." But
Like, even if you think about sorry guys, we're getting into a little tangent here, but even if you think about the fact that Xbox has this way of doing things on an app. On the computer, they have an app on the computer that allows you to buy things on the computer and play them both on the Xbox and the computer. On the computer, I can actually send a message to my Xbox and tell it to download the game on the Xbox while I'm doing other shit. Like, Xbox has just done everything else besides the console until recently. Right, you know, like, it's just incredible how no one has really taken those lessons and learned from them. You know, we talked about the Sony bullshit with the DualShock controller, where they literally stole the fucking blueprint from another company, and then they were the only company out of like five different gaming companies not to just say, okay, we fucked up, we'll pay you. You know, they're the ones who sued them, and then they fucking lost, and they lost a bunch of money because they're just so fucking into themselves. They're like, no, we're fucking right. It's so silly.
I will say the Sony app and stuff has gotten a lot better over the years. Like, you can actually buy and download games and stuff.
Oh, good.
And do a bunch of that stuff now.
They still haven't, like, approached the console gaming world and said, okay, we can do both, you know? Not console gaming, the PC gaming world, and said we can do both. You know, they're still, like, struggling to even put
those
games.
They're starting to, but, like, every launch of a PC port of a PlayStation game always goes terribly. Almost always.
Because they're not good at porting the games. I don't know what it is, man. They just make games too integral to their fucking platform.
Yeah, and so, like, it usually takes about a year after it's released on PC for it to be playable.
Yeah, which is crazy. It's just fucking intense. Yeah. All right, well, let's now that we've talked a lot about that, let's jump right into the story of this week's game. We are playing Half-Life, the first one.
Yes.
And guys,
did you play Half-Life or Half-Life Source?
I don't know what Half-Life Source is. I just played Half-Life.
Okay, so when you get Half-Life a lot of times now, you can either pick to play Half-Life or Half-Life Source. Half-Life Source is like a remaster of the game in the Source engine.
But it's nice.
The same exact game, just has a lot of people say that it's really buggy, so you need a mod to be able to play it.
Okay, no, I did not, because I would have downloaded the mod then, but I clearly didn't have to do that. No, I played original Half-Life, and just so everyone knows, this kind of coincides with the founding of the company. So we are going to be talking a lot about the founding of the company, because this is literally their first game. They are
Valve.
They're literally the biggest gaming company of all time, I think, right now. They're like, and they're just, they've done everything right
now.
They're similar. They're probably about the same, just because they both have done something. And no, I would say they're bigger, because their platform for buying games is far more popular.
I always forget Steam is Valve. Damn it, dude. Like, God
far
damn,
more
mind.
Popular.
Never mind.
They are, I think, yeah, I think they are the number one gaming company because of Steam. I don't know. Their games are really good, too. It's just Steam made them huge. So
I was gonna say Steam and Epic are like the two biggest stores.
Yeah, and Epic's barely like 1% of Steam. So like, you can't even compare the two. All right, so Half-Life is an action adventure game where you play as Gordon Freeman. And I like saying it like Freeman because of Boondocks, the TV show. It's such a good show, and in it, the old rich white guy says, free man, what a good last name. It just makes me laugh, so I love saying free man now instead of Freeman. Gordon Freeman, a scientist that works for Black Mesa at their site in New Mexico. He must deal with otherworldly creatures after an accident opens portals to their home world of Zen.
Zen.
Not the money. The X-X-E-N, which I don't think is the same.
No.
The making of the game starts in 1996. Mike Harrington wanted to quit working for Microsoft and start a game company. By the way, at that point, he had been working for Microsoft for 9 years. I didn't put it in here, but I'm like, crazy. And Microsoft, he said at that point, was only 1,500 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, isn't that fucking crazy? Since now they have like 65 million people working for them, like across the globe. It's intense, man.
Oh, yeah.
He had made a promise to himself the year before and decided to follow through on it. He didn't know how to do it, but he had asked several people from Microsoft to come with him. One of them said yes, but then decided to go work for id Games instead, which id is very famous for Doom, and I think I put it in here.
Yeah.
Then while he... No, I didn't put it in there. Weird. I think I put it in there later, but it's famous for Doom and Quake and stuff.
Yeah.
Then while eating lunch, he was talking to Gabe Newell. Gabe heard Mike's pitch and said he was interested in starting this company with him. They left Microsoft and started Valve. After leaving Microsoft, they went to id, since now there was a friend who worked there. Which I thought was fun. I'm like, that's crazy that the guy he was going to start it with went to id, and then id really pushed them to understand how to make a game.
Yeah.
True. Like, it is insane. They went to id, since their friend now worked there, to ask id for pointers on how to run a game company. They got to meet with John Romero, and he told them to make sure and hire plenty of level designers. At the end of the meeting, John gave them source code for Quake to use as a start for their own game's engine, which is fucking holy shit. What a cool guy John Romero is.
Seriously.
Like, what a cool motherfucker that guy is. God, just imagine, like, us creating something and saying, here, you start out with this and see what you can do with it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Here's all the starting tools you would need. Have at it. What?
Sorry, guys, had to sneeze. Yeah, seriously, like, no fucking joke. That's, like, nowadays, it's so fucking protected. People's game engines are everything to them. And back then, they were like, oh, whatever, fucking take it. Here's a complete source code. The incomplete source code for Quake.
Yeah.
Like, it's just intense. It's so fucking crazy. They then got to work hiring people. They hired people for the game, but most of them had never shipped a game before. Only 3 or 4 people who worked for Valve at the time had ever worked on games prior.
Damn.
Yep. When they were hiring people, they were looking for people with unique experience with games. They ended up hiring modders who modded games like Quake.
Nice.
One of the modders was a manager at a Waffle House before he was hired by Valve. It was more important to Valve to get people with talent, not degrees. Like, they said that 100%. Out loud. Because they're like, we want people who know how to work on this stuff, and not only that, who know how to make shit fun.
I mean, sometimes that's like the best way to do it. Like, I really love I think it was in like the Lego movie, they had like a whole scene, like there was this like 11-year-old content creator with Legos that would do all this like crazy, like he would remake trailers and stuff in Legos, and the directors of that movie, when they were making it, saw his videos, loved it so much that they actually offered him a role to do a whole scene in the movie and gave him full reins on it. And I'm like, that's fucking awesome. Like, that's the kind of thing that I would want to be if I was rich. I'd be like, oh, I'm going to pick out this like 11-year-old kid who's got more talent than most people with degrees have and have him make this movie for me.
It's just intense. Like, how people don't see that. It's crazy. When the team finally started putting together the idea of Half-Life, they had a big inspiration for the theme of the game. Mike and Gabe really liked Stephen King's novella, The Mist. The novella is about creatures that invade Earth, and I didn't put it in. I haven't read the novella. I've only seen the shitty movie from like 2007.
Yeah, but I've only seen clips of it.
We open up open up doors to other dimensions, and a mist comes through, and the creatures can live inside the mist, but once they get outside the mist, they start dying.
Yeah.
So I think that's the cusp of what the story's about, maybe.
Yeah.
When starting work on the game, Valve was working on 2 games at the same time, a game called Prospero and Half-Life, and this is fucked. It was frustrating for the people working on Prospero because they would have an idea, and the people working on Half-Life would ask them about their progress and then just take their ideas. There was one where they're like, the guy created the lightning for, it's the first scene of the game. You're in like this area and there's lightning coming out from the machine that's being done. And that was for Prospero. And he's like, that's really cool. I'm going to take it.
It's just kind of like when you tell someone like, oh, you know, my wife's pregnant and we were thinking about kids' names. I was thinking Chloe. And then one of your friends names their daughter Chloe before you get to, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yep. It's so funny. And of course, because of that, they stopped the idea of Prospero.
I was going to say, I was like, I don't even think I've heard of that.
Yeah. Well, they had everyone working on Half-Life at that point. When they finally started putting together the full scope of Half-Life, they ended up taking the engine for Quake and completely changing it. So they had this good foundation to start, but then they're like, well, like it works for Quake, but it doesn't work for what we want to do.
Yeah.
And there's a big reason for that, and I believe I put it here, I hope. Quake had some things that they really liked, but they wanted their game to be far different. One of the main differences to start out with is that their game would be a 16-bit rather than an 8-bit game. Now, I didn't know this. And we might have gone over this previously, but I don't remember. With 8-bit games, people were restricted to having 256 unique pieces of data. Okay, so that's essentially, if you wanted to use a color palette, you would have 256 colors you could choose from, which sounds like a lot, but in the grand sense of the world, we are seeing colors that don't even exist on paper at this point. You know, when we see a leaf, that's slightly greener than this leaf. That's slightly greener than this leaf. That's a little less green than this. You know, we don't think about that, but there is a lot of fucking data in that shit.
Oh, yeah.
So, so they would have a max of 250 colors for the game. With 16-bit, you could store over 65,000 unique pieces of data.
That's a little bit of a jump.
The engine also didn't have a great movement for the characters. So the other thing the studio decided to invest in was skeletal animations for characters.
Okay.
Because you think about 8-bit games, like characters would just kind of die and drop.
Yeah.
With skeletal animations, you know, you might get like an arm flail, or you might get like a dramatic, let me get on my knees and then drop, you know? That way they could have a unique movements for each character they wanted to create. Many creatures in the first part of the making of the game came from two people. It was funny because depending on how the creature looked, other people at the studio could tell which one of the two creature designers made the creature. Anything that looked like it was vaguely inappropriate was made by one, and all the others were made by the other guy. They would literally go up to this guy and be like, you realize your thing looks like a ball sack, right? And he's like, oh yeah, I didn't even notice.
You realize it's like a vagina faced dog?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
it was funny. He sounded like a cool, funny guy. I don't know if he was in the documentary I watched, but he was very—he sounded very funny. The team knew they wanted to have the scientists in the game seem more real, so they had them looking for things and staring at screens. They were originally not going to have the characters' mouths move when they were talking, but one day, two of the designers were complaining about another designer wanting to do it. They complained to the point where each admitted they couldn't do something, that the other one could. Then they went to their offices, and within an hour, they had created a way for the mouths to move and sync well with the voice lines.
That's hilarious.
They thought it was funny how they came to this conclusion because they were bitching about someone who said that they could do it.
Fuck you.
I will say, Valve sounds like a fucking sweet company to work for in the 90s. This sounds like so much fun. The scientists would also have random lines that were said to both the player and other NPCs. A lot of the time, these voice lines would not actually match up. So you would have a scientist say how cool it was to be working on something, and another say, not really.
That matches up.
It matches up, but what they pointed out is like when the character says not really, they're saying it to a question, not to a statement. Yeah. So like not they'll really. Say, yeah. So, like, one person will say, "How do the screens look okay?" And then the correct response would be, "Not really." But instead, you get those weird moments in voice lines because they randomize them. It's just really funny.
That's fair.
They also wanted there to be interactive scenes in the game, meaning they were scenes that existed while the player was playing and able to move and control the character. This was good in theory, but they soon realized that a player would just go and run up and disturb the scene. So they ended up putting up a lot of scenes behind glass walls and other obstructions so the player couldn't see, so the player could see the outcome without interfering.
Nice.
Because, yeah, the one thing one of them said was, like, literally we'd have this cool scene going on, and the point is the scientist dies, and then the mm-hmm. player would just run up, kill the creature, and then also kill the scientist.
Jesus. Yeah. I mean, that sounds about right.
Yeah, it was really funny. When making a lot of the characters in the game, they really had no direction for the NPCs. They had an NPC at the beginning of the game in a suit with a briefcase talking to a scientist, and that was the lone time that character appeared in the game. Okay? Do you know who that is?
Are you talking about the G-Man? Because he appears more than one time in the game.
Yes, you're right. G-Man. Okay. When going back through, they realized that character could become their Smoking Man. The Smoking Man was a character from X-Files that was behind-the-scenes antagonist.
Yep.
So they filtered him into several more areas and had him become the big bad at the end of the game. Which I thought,
yeah, it's really funny because he's like hidden so much throughout random parts.
Yeah,
he's
literally
just like in the background, everywhere. Like on a staircase you can't get to or something.
Yep. And he's like, at one point you're running up to him and he's just walking by you and then he disappears down a hallway.
Well, and he's like the main character, the main like person you talk to in another game called like the Bureau Unclassified or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's funny because originally he was just one guy in one scene at the beginning of the game. One of the things that came out early in playtesting for the game was that the testers said the game was not real enough. In response to this, Gabe said that real life is not exciting. That's why people go home and play video games.
Fair statement.
Okay, so I'm in real life. I'm making a grocery store list. I go to the grocery store. I buy shit. Here we are. That's real life. Is that what you want in your fucking game? And then it turns out that people do that in simulator games nowadays. So yes, they did want that.
But even then, it's like a little bit of semblance of not reality. Because like, even like Trading Card Simulator, like
yeah,
when you start up the store and you're only allowed to have like the base packs.
Well, not like, just no that. It's like
that with, I know,
and you like, start out with $1,000, and that's enough to keep the store open, and your rent's only like $100 a month or something. It's just like yeah. There's no realist, but it's just funny that somebody would complain about that and he'd come right back and say, fuck you and your realism. Real life is boring. It's just
that's so true.
Monsters in the game played an important role as well. Originally, there were only head crabs in the first many levels of the game. This had to be changed so that the player would have a better time playing against the enemies in the beginning. The most important thing they wanted from the game was that for it to be fun. Adding more monsters gave it the ability to be more fun. So yeah, they talked about, I didn't put this in here, but the lightning guys. Some guy had made this animation before they even thought of the idea of the lightning guys. And he's like, that's really fucking cool. That's a cool animation. Can we put that on a monster? And the guy was like, are you sure? Because that's, he's shooting lightning out of his arms. It sounds kind of overpowered. He's like, no. It'll be fine.
It is, but I like it because it's got a long windup, so you can really see it and just dodge.
I think I read that they changed the windup because players did complain that it was too powerful.
It would be because if those shot at you like soldiers shot at you just instantaneously and as soon as they see you, it would be broken as shit. But giving you that little bit of time to like get behind a wall and then shoot them, it was great.
They ended up designing a ton of monsters and sprinkled them in throughout the game. There was only one person who developed all of the textures for the game.
Damn.
And I love the she's amazing. Her Karen something was her name. I didn't put it in here, but she was awesome in the documentary. She talked about how she was the only woman who worked there for a long time, and that was weird.
Okay.
She just felt really awkward, but she also did such a fucking funny job of doing all these things. So she ended up hand painting a lot of them at first, but then when timing became an issue, she drove around Seattle, Washington, and just started taking pictures of industrial stuff that she could find.
That's cool.
She also went to the local Costco and took a bunch of photos of food stocks for certain areas of the game, which I thought was fucking hilarious. Literally, she showed the photo of Costco and then showed there's a part where you're in a freezer.
Yeah.
And then showed the picture or the texture of the things in the freezer. And it's literally the shit that was at Costco.
That's hilarious.
It's pretty good.
That's good.
A lot of the Zen areas in the game were inspired by images from electron microscopes. All of the music and sound in the game was written by one person, one of the programmers for the game, Kelly Bailey. Knew how to produce some music and ended up just writing the soundtrack as well as figuring out all of the sounds creatures made. The head crabs in the game were rat sounds that were slowed down, then reversed.
Weird. Okay.
Right? So he was just fucking around. Literally, it was a guy who did not know what he was doing, who was just fucking around. He also did reverb. Yeah, he did the reverb sounds for small spaces and big cavernous areas. Many of the voices in the game were done by the team. Mike Shapiro, I think this was the one guy they actually hired to play a character. Mike Shapiro did the voice of the G-Man. He had originally recorded all the voice lines in a normal voice, but the team was not too thrilled with it. They wanted him to try something different, but kept the original lines if they didn't like what they tried. Shapiro ended up doing a lizard-like voice for the second take of the lines, and everyone loved it. All right. Three months from the release of the game. What happens 3 months from the release of the game, Steven? What has happened so many times on this podcast?
Delay?
3 months. Not just a delay.
Production hell? I don't know.
You restart everything from scratch.
Oh, God damn it. Yes.
They did the same thing. They're probably the first ones to do it, actually. Three months from their release of the game in November of 1997, the team were put in one room and were watching Gabe play the game. And this is fucking hilarious. Gabe kept pulling at his hair while playing the game and kept saying, "We're going to fail."
Oh, man.
The guy said, like, he just had his hands on his head, pulling his hair. And he's like, "We're going to fail. We're going to fail. We're going to fail. We're going to fail." While everyone in the company was in the room with him watching him do this.
Damn.
Yeah. It's just like, what a fucking day. They realized that the game was just not fun. It wasn't cohesive. They decided that they were going to wait to release the game. They wanted to present something they were proud of. They decided this knowing that Sierra Studios, the publisher of the game, was not going to give them any more money to make the game.
Damn.
Gabe said on this, "Late is for a little, but suck is for forever."
Ever. I agree.
100%.
I wish more companies would have that mentality, because as much as it sucks to have delays, as much as it sucks to like start everything over and start from scratch, I would much rather you put out a game that the people will love and that everyone will like than putting out some trash garbage that just gets shit on and fails and has so many bugs and everything.
Yep. It's just crazy. I mean, they only spent a year on this, right? Because they started in November of 96, and then November of 97 is when they wanted a release, which is not a lot of time to put together a fucking game.
Even back then.
2 years at like minimum, I think, was the time for game creating, unless you were in the 80s and it was like a month. And then you have E.T., and then you ruined Atari forever.
Yep.
They had a couple of problems to fix. Firstly, the game felt like a mess. There was very little thought in how everything interacted together. A lot of the levels were made by people alone. So when they combined them, they didn't mesh. To fix this, they made a cabal or small group to have a small team ready to make the decisions on how the player would move through the game. During this time, each person working for Valve was working 18-hour days.
Jesus.
They would go to work at 1 p.m. and stay until the early morning.
Jesus.
Yep. This went on for an additional year. When they were trying to find more funding for the game, they gave a 3-level demo to a video card company. The next day, their 3-level demo had leaked. The team was very upset at this, but it ended up being good.
True.
They had
leaks can make hype.
This is actually, they had a gaming magazine make an article stating that they don't normally review demos, but they had to do this one, which fucking crazy.
Yeah.
This not only created hype for the game, but also helped the team know they were heading in the right direction.
Cool.
So after all that, in November of 1998, Half-Life was released to stellar reviews. Like okay, where it's stellar. People fucking loved it. And I didn't put it in here because it's long, but they based the entire character of Gordon Freeman, and it's really funny, off one of the programmers in the game, who worked for the studio. And they're talking to him, and he's like, one of them who knew him back then, who was like working with him, said, "Did you have a man or a ponytail back then?" He's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Oh yeah, you could kind of see it," because he's like, if you zoom out on the character and then really zoom back in, you can see this tiny little triangle polygon bullshit that is my ponytail.
That's hilarious.
Really funny. And then another actually, I'll leave it for you. If you don't mention it, I'll mention it in the secrets. Okay. But I assume you found it, so
possibly. I don't know, I didn't get a lot of secrets for this. So
okay, there's one big one that it has to do with one of the people who helped make the game. So if you didn't get it, I will mention it at that time.
Sounds good. I probably did.
All right, and that's it for the story, guys.
Oh, all right, well, cool. So yeah, I guess we will go ahead and I guess talk about our best and the worst.
All right. So if you play this game today, it's like the entire thing's a worst, right? This is a really hard, not everything, but man, does it suck. Like it's so fucking bad to move. It's got that stupid thing, but this is every fucking game back then. I don't understand why they all had this slide at the end of your stop of movement. It doesn't make any fucking sense why it was there to me, but I'm sure for programming, like there's something with the polygons that made that slide have to be there.
Yeah. Which I will say one of the things that's annoying that I just found out, cause I was watching some more shit about the game before we got on, and apparently even on like the base game, if you go to the start menu, there's a HD features thing that you can check mark, and it gives you fully new models of several of the guns, fully new models of a lot of the characters, and it's all the DLC shit that came out for the game put into the base game, and it's just a thing you checkbox in the fucking menu. And I was like, are you, and I kept on, like, every time I got stuck I'd watch a video and I'd be like, what gun do they have? I don't have that gun.
Yeah.
It was like the submachine gun, but they made it a full assault rifle in the HD version of it. And I was like, and all you had to do is check mark a box in the menu. I was like, you fucking assholes.
I mean, like, I played this game on easy difficulty, okay guys?
Yeah.
And it, like, the difficulty on easy is really fucking hard.
It is, honestly, because, like, everything hits you so hard.
So hard, and you do not hit hard enough on anything.
No, you don't. Like, some enemies are pretty easy to take down. Other enemies are, like the ones that shoot lightning are actually, like, one of the easiest ones to take down.
Yeah, because they just stand still.
Yeah, and while they're doing their shit. They're pretty easy to hit. Yeah. But, like, besides that, I will agree with that. I do think, like, one of the good things is I do think the level design itself,
it's really
the
good.
Levels actually, like, intertwine with itself, and how much freedom and variety and exploration you're, like, encouraged to do is really good. The one downside I have to the map and the level design is there's no map or guide towards any objectives. Like, a lot of times you have to, like, read a sign, like, on the wall that's like, laboratory this direction, you follow a green stripe that goes to where that lab is,
and that's only really in the beginning of the game, and like there is not a lot of direction in this game. You know, Halo came out 4 years later, and they did a much better job, or 3 years later, and they did a much better job at just giving you indications on these giant maps of where to go, and I think that's what was missing for Half-Life. It's just little indications. I will say the creatures are fucking on point. They're cool looking. A lot of them. The big boss creatures, especially, they're fucking frightening. Yeah. That gargantuan you have to fight, where you can, like, kill it by doing the lightning thing, or kill it by just throwing fucking grenades at it.
Are you talking about the giant, like, beast coming out of the sewer thing that's, like, attacking you, or are you talking about
The giant, like,
late
giant
in the game.
Not late in the game. This is pretty early in the game. It's right after that.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. Like, Yeah.
It's just a gargantuan creature that's fucking, like,
that thing's hitting. Ridiculous.
It is, but, like, it's really easy to evade. Like, you could just run right by it. Also, I didn't put this in here, but the character runs at 25 miles per hour.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous.
You are so, they're like, they had to literally put up, like, purposeful obstacles in your way to slow you down so you look around more. It was really funny.
For those that don't know, that's almost Olympian speed, probably.
Olympian, that's like, and that's at their max. We're talking like you're always running at 25 miles per hour.
If we're saying, like, marathon runners, he uses the number one marathon runner.
this guy literally could do this for 5 hours straight and have no problem coming out of it. But For the most part, if I would have played this game when I was 8, I probably would have loved it. I probably would have figured everything out. I probably would have been a little frustrated, but I probably would have found an online guide of how to do shit. So
yeah, and I mean, like, honestly, like, the fast-paced shooting is almost kind of like Doom-esque.
Yeah. And... In fact, a little bit better than Doom because the weapons are just cooler to look at.
True, true. So I will give it that, and I know, like, the more and more I was playing this, the more and more, because I had debated, because there's a full remake of this game that came out. I think it was like 2018 or maybe somewhere around there. I could be wrong in the year. But it's called Black Mesa. And it's actually a full, because like the remastered or whatever, like the Half-Life Source was just the original game ported into the Source engine. But there was a devoted team that actually made... the original Half-Life, fully remaking it in the Source engine from the like get-go, and they remade everything. They changed some of the puzzles. They changed them around. They changed all the textures. They changed the way everything looked, but kept the game basically almost exactly the same. Besides that, and that has gotten praised by almost everybody. Like,
oh, that's cool.
And even for the graphics from the old Source engine, it looks good to today's graphics.
I mean, I would love to play the remake of this game. Honestly, it's a cool game. It's got a lot of cool features on it. Like, I have no real best. This game kind of fits middle ground for most things. Gun shooting is cool, but it's not the best from the time. Platforming certainly not the best. It's got a lot of
awful in this.
This is how fucking games were made. Yeah, this is how games were made back then. It's just how they all thought that it should be. There should be some sort of platforming. There should be some sort of gunfighting. There should be some enemies that are just too strong. Like, it's just how they made games, and now they just make it like more on a difficulty tier base. So if you're on easy, if you die, it's pretty much your fault. But if you're on hard, if you die, it's because one stray bullet ricocheted off one thing wrong and killed you. Like, there's a lot of good to this game if you would play it at the time. I will say that.
Oh, yeah.
It's just now it's so hard to compare because you're like, well, the jumping sucks. The sliding after you stop sucks. The fact that the Marines kind of run around all fucking weird sucks. The monsters are sucky.
I will say, going back and playing this compared to some of the older games, like, this isn't as bad as a lot of older games.
No, so, and like I had more fun playing this than I did Doom, for sure.
Yes, yeah. I guess, is that pretty much everything you have for the best and worst?
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, nothing was so bad it broke the game, but nothing was so good that it really, like, captured my attention too much.
I guess let's talk about the first couple hours of the game.
This game's a little slow. You know what's funny is they really touted the opening sequence of the game where you're going through, like, which is cool. And they're right. Like, during the documentary I watched, they literally said, like, most people don't realize that you're not watching a cutscene until you accidentally move your mouse a little bit and realize that you're, like, in control in this moment. And I'm like, well, that's great. But then that means also with no cutscenes, you cannot skip the things that are way too fucking long. And this was way too fucking long.
Yes, agreed. I will say, we didn't say that earlier, but there is absolutely zero cutscenes in the entire game, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's all live action scenes. You're doing shit while things are happening. But the big problem with that is, like, again, you can't skip. If you're playing this game for the umpteenth time and you're like, I just want to fucking shoot shit, you can't skip the opening, which is literally probably half an hour, right?
Yeah. Especially just if you don't know where you're going. Like, it takes you a while to figure out where you're supposed to go. And I know, like, it took me a while, and I was like, where the hell do you go with this building? And just walking around everywhere and trying to talk to everyone. And I'm like, this is so weird and pointless. But once you actually, like, get into the story and, like, aliens start appearing and stuff, it gets more interesting. But I think that initial first half hour is really, like, kind of just, like, you kind of have to persevere through it, and it's kind of boring, and you have to find your own way, and there's nothing to guide you in any way, shape, or form. So be prepared.
It is a lot, guys. It is a lot. And like I said, it's just 30 minutes of not even tutorial. It's really just 30 minutes of an opening. Like, there's no real tutorial in this part of the
game. Oh, yeah. There's not much of anything. Yeah.
So, like, back in the day, they really didn't do a lot for tutorials anyway. Like, if I remember, was it Crash Bandicoot, where they would take you to another world for, like, 5 minutes, and then you do the tutorial in the other world, and then you'd come back, and then you'd know how to do the shit. I think a lot of games did that.
They also did that in Ape Escape.
Yeah, I think they did that in a lot of shit ton of games, honestly.
Yeah.
That was just the way to do tutorials. There was no like play and get the tutorial while you were playing. Not until maybe Halo, probably 2001-ish.
Halo definitely was one of the ones yeah. I first remember that had it, because like, look up, look down. All right, now we're checking your systems. And I like the way that they did that too, because it was like making sure Master Chief's systems were working, and it wasn't necessarily yeah. about like teaching you how to play the game. Like, this yeah. is how your camera controls work. It's like, hey, we're going to make sure your visor works.
yeah, yeah. And like, yeah. that's, it's cool. Like, I don't know. In this game, it maybe needed a tiny bit of a tutorial, because I yeah. just kept having to stop, look at the control scheme, and be like, how the fuck do I interact with shit? Oh, it's not the button yeah. I thought it would be. So let's just do this. And yeah, yeah. It's a lot, guys. It is a lot.
That's fair.
So I'm going to say fail, sorry, on the 2 hours, because I think it doesn't really capture your attention until 30 minutes into the gameplay, and that's just, a lot of people fucking put it down after 10 minutes, you know?
Yeah, I will say probably a lot of people will get frustrated. If you have to look something up at the first 30 minutes, that's usually not a good sign. And if you're,
yeah.
if you're like me and you're like, if I have to look something up that early on in the game, then I'm probably going to be looking up shit the entire game, and it's going to yep. get old.
I agree.
Especially because there's not a lot of like good guides for the game, because...
No.
No, there's like, you basically watch a YouTube video and scroll through like, all right, this is the section I'm at.
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but so I kind of agree. I don't think it's like the worst thing ever. I think especially like once, like I said, like once the shit actually starts happening, the facility starts breaking down, the aliens start coming in, it does kind of get you a little bit more intrigued in the story.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, it kind of hit or miss whether you're going to enjoy it or not.
Yeah.
So... We aren't going to do a Steve Achieves section, because this was before achievements.
Yep.
But the game is about 12 and a half hours long. I saw some stories that said that it was about 15 and a half hours to 100% complete, which I don't even really know what 100% completing this would necessarily be.
I don't know. Like, I figured there'd be, like, secret areas and stuff, kind of like there are in Doom, but I didn't really find any, so maybe
there
not.
Are secret areas, but they're, like... So, like, some of the secret areas, like, sometimes talking to a scientist and having them follow you, you can get them to unlock a door that you wouldn't be able to access. Or sometimes just through exploration, you might find a vent that you wouldn't normally see because it's kind of hidden in a shadow or something like that. And that might take you to another area that has just, like, a bunch of extra ammo or shit. So there's nothing, like, really big, like, secret-wise. It's more just, like, there's different ways to get to different areas that you might not have seen before. So even, like... For speedrunners, it's really good because there's a lot of shortcuts that most people don't even know about.
All right.
So since we're skipping that, we're going straight to the hunt for all the eggs.
I'm curious if you found the one I was talking about.
I don't think I did. I didn't find much when I was looking up stuff. And there is the first one that I saw myself that I kind of chuckled at was one of the first scenes when you're like walking through one of the areas, you can... walk by a couple like coffee machines and stuff like that, and the coffee machine actually has the Valve logo on it.
Oh, that's cool. Did you press the microwave when you went by the microwave?
No, I didn't.
You can make the soup explode in the microwave.
No, jeez.
And the scientists will be like, my soup, why would you do that?
That's hilarious.
It is, actually. They did some funny stuff. They're like, we try to emulate life as much as we could.
Yeah. Whenever a trash can is destroyed, there is a chance for it to spawn a newspaper called The Onion. And it's mockery on the website, The Onion.
Nice.
So I thought that was kind of fun. As Scott and I were talked about earlier, G-Man can be spotted spying on you. G-Man's identity and motives remain unexplained. His allegiance is also unknown to this day. Although he and his employers are apparent enemies to the Combine and are seen as a threat by them. Playing the role of the overseer and eventual employer, he often appears in odd and unreachable places, observing Gordon and other characters periodically, aiding them or hindering them.
Yep. Yeah, I mean... Yeah.
What was the secret you were
talking about? Okay, so actually in the first 10 minutes of the game, if you go into the locker rooms, you can open up your locker, Gordon Freeman... And when you open up that locker, you'll see a picture of a baby in there.
Oh.
And the baby is one of the, it's really a, kind of a sad story. One of the developers of the game had a baby. The baby had severe disabilities.
Oh.
He said at the time of making the documentary that the baby was 25, but had the mind of a 3-year-old.
Oh, wow.
So it's like that bad of a disability. It's not like, you know, 25 mind of a 9-year-old, which it's not much better, but it's a little better. And he said, like, you know, all these guys at the time we were doing 18-hour days, and then once my baby was born, just needed so much stuff that I couldn't commit to it. I had to only do like 6-hour days, and they were totally cool with that. And then they surprised me by putting my baby's picture in the game.
Oh, okay. Well, that's kind of
cool. So it was really cool. His wife actually worked for the company too, but his wife had to, you know, since they had their baby and they realized how much work it would be with the special needs baby, they were like, we can't.
Yeah.
We can't have both of us working. We have, one of us can, and the other one has to stay home.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, especially dealing with special needs. Like, babies that are alone are a handful, especially in their first couple of years of life, because you pretty much have to be monitoring them 24/7. But especially special needs babies take so much better extra care and effort and so much more costly. Sure. So
this poor guy was about to be in tears while he's telling this story, and I'm like, oh damn. Man. I'm sorry, dude.
I don't think I opened the locker, so that I think that's why I didn't see it.
Yeah. I opened it. I had no idea why there was a picture of a baby in there. I was like, oh, I guess I'm a dad. Who knew? Right. And then I watched the documentary, and that's when you find out what's going on with that, which is cool. I mean, it's a cool little story. I liked it a lot.
Nice. Well, that's awesome.
Yep. All right.
So that's pretty much it for the Hunt for the Eggs. There might be more. I might have missed some, so forgive me if I missed some of those, but it is kind of hard to find some of these in some of these older games. Especially ones that don't have very good guides and stuff like that. So,
and not just that, it's like things that were relevant back then might not even be a thing today. Yeah, and so we could miss
that's
an
true.
Egg just not understanding what the hell it is.
True. So I guess we'll get right to the end segment here and talk about what we think it's worth.
This game is a struggle because I love the company. Guys, when I say Valve is one of the biggest gaming companies of all time, I think they are. Like, you know, Half-Life wasn't an amazing game, but Half-Life 2, I've heard, is one of the best games of all time. And then Left 4 Dead's one of my favorite games. And then, like, you start to name all of their games. They're Dota 2. They're, like, they're the biggest. Counter-Strike. Like, they've made
Gary's
some of
Mod,
the biggest. Biggest fucking games in the world, and they do it based on hiring fucking modders to do that for them.
Well, and a lot of their games are mods of other games. Like, Counter-Strike was a mod of Half-Life.
But it's of their games, mostly. Dota's the only one I think is not. I think Dota is...
And I think Gary's Mod was a mod that they took from Half-Life 2, and then Gary's Mod ended up becoming a bunch of other games after that, and then, like, so many games have spawned from Valve games because of how much they reuse their own stuff.
Because they're fucking awesome. Like, and then, of course, Steam comes out, and you're like, Steam is one of the coolest things that you could ever fucking think of in your life. Like, honestly, Valve is one of my favorite companies. They're one of the few companies that I would say I'd love to work for them.
Scott will suck your dick, Valve. Like, if this
I
is your dick,
I will suck your
this
dick.
Is Scott.
Like, don't touch so your hard. Mic like that.
Sorry to everyone who's listening. Just sucking on the microphone.
Like, I think because of the, and I don't normally do this. I don't normally say, like, because of where this leads. Like, this is their first game. Of course, it's gonna fucking blow.
Yeah.
And it didn't blow exactly, but it's very middle of the ground. I will give it a 3. I think it deserves a 4, though. And I only think that because it's evolved Valve into one of the best fucking companies in the world. Like,
and see, this is kind of the hard thing about, like, especially rating games in today's time. Because in today's time, a lot of people would probably give this game a 2.
Yeah.
At the time, they'd probably give it a lot more, like a 4 or a 5. But, like,
honestly,
in today's times and stuff, like, I still think there is some, like, really interesting things here. And it was kind of, you were talking about, like, Half-Life 2 being a really important game. Everyone says that was the best. Like, Jin thought that same thing. But when I was looking up, like, things on Steam, things on Reddit, things on a bunch of different chat rooms and stuff, there's a huge argument from both sides that some people say Half-Life 1, some people say Half-Life 2. And a lot of people say, like, Half-Life 1 has a better story, but Half-Life 2 has more puzzles and more and a little less action, but more of this, and, like, so there's a niche in there, and you're going to probably, like, one over the other.
Yeah,
but it kind of depends. So for me, like, not thinking Half-Life was, like, the greatest game, I think Half-Life 2 is going to be the one that brings me into this series the
most. For sure, like other games have it for us in the past, with the second one being far better.
But I'm also, like, I need to play back Black Mesa right now, because I actually just watched some gameplay for that recently, and I was like,
"It looks great.
This actually looks really fucking good."
All right, you're selling me on it now.
Pretty solid. I do have it on our Steam library, so you can play it whenever you want to.
Nice. You know, I will say, I think this game as a standalone game, 3 out of 5. Yeah. I think this game as a pioneering effort to get Valve into the forefront, 4 out of 5 for sure.
Yeah, I mean, seeing with what it became and what it's done, it's hard not to give it more praise because we owe so much to this game
to Valve.
For creating Valve and making Valve as popular as it was and all the different modding communities and stuff. Like, modding wasn't even like that big of a popular thing.
I mean, it was popular, which is very frowned upon by a lot of the game companies.
I guess that's true, too. But I mean, like, modding in today's culture is, like, huge. And, like, modders get hired all the time more.
I use mods literally all the fucking time. All the time. Because they make games better.
Oh, actually, I was debating, because I still haven't played Baldur's Gate 3 with mods. And they just added mods to console recently and stuff, too.
Yeah.
Like Skyrim did. And, so I was watching videos on like what the best mods are, and there's a company out there that's like, all right, there's one mod that everyone has to download, and it's the best mod ever. And this mod actually just hit 100 million downloads. It's one of the most downloaded mods of all time, and it's just giving Withers boobs.
Okay.
It's the dumbest thing ever.
If that's what they want to do,
100 million downloads to give this undead deity boobs.
Dude, you know what's funny is I would mod just to put lightsabers in the game. I don't know why I like lightsabers so much, but I always want them in games. So
that's fair. I mean, there's a lot of like mods I've honestly, because there's a whole modding community that I've seen that have actually like expanded it so you can actually go up to level 20 instead of level 12. There's a whole thing of mods about like what was the other ones that was cool. They actually added more places and more story elements and more missions and stuff, more dungeons, and I was like, all right, we can make this like the coolest thing ever. And apparently I saw an article recently that said the modding community for Baldur's Gate 3 is really trying to get it so that you can make your own custom stories, so you can make your own D&D playthroughs and DM your own story in Baldur's Gate. And I'm like,
I'm pretty sure that's another company that was really into that. They wanted like the game to be for the people rather than against them, you know? So,
oh yeah, for sure.
All right, well, that was the game.
Yes, so I guess next week we are doing a kind of a different game. We haven't played a kind of like more narrative one in a while. But we are actually going to play Stray Gods, the role-playing musical.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited for this one. It looks pretty cool.
It's got a bunch of people from Critical Role for anyone who loves all those voice actors. Laura Bailey, Ashley Johnson, Troy Baker, which, I mean, Troy Baker is not necessarily Critical Role. He's appeared on a couple episodes.
I was
going to
say, you just named two and then Troy Baker.
Well, Troy Baker,
Troy Baker is in, he's in a lot of shit, dude. I feel like every other week we're talking about how he's in another game that we're doing. So.
Dude, he's in everything, and he's amazing. He's one of the best voice actors, period. Hands down.
I'll give you that.
Especially Laura Bailey. I love Laura Bailey. Laura Bailey, Commander Shepard, and a bunch of other people.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our next week game, Stray Gods.
Yep.
Role-playing musical. So, take a listen.
Love you.
We'll see you guys next week. Bye!
Bye!